Hot route! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett ready to talk some football on the first day of Kentucky spring practice 2021. It felt like a slow crawl to get here, Luckett, but we finally made it. It's football time in the bluegrass.
Yeah, man, it feels good to get some quotes the last couple of days and get some writing done and kind of try to dig a little deeper and see what they're really saying. So definitely good to have football back. Hopefully Kentucky will give us some clips of practice, show us what's really going on. But yeah, man, it's definitely good to get back and, you know, talk some ball here for sure. Obviously no spring game, but these 15 practices are going to be pretty exciting. And it's clear that they're focusing on themselves, not so much anybody else. They're just trying to get better as they move forward.
Yeah. And they're not even, I don't even know if we talked since they said there's no spring game. It's unfortunate, but it is kind of, a pandemic's going to take priority over a intramural spring or inter-squad scrimmage at Kroger Field. It's the largest vaccination site in the state. So if you haven't registered for your shot, go ahead and do that. Get shot up. It won't bother you none, and it'll get us back to normal to where we can fill up Kroger Field for the real games this fall. I know I was incredibly disheartened when I first heard the news, but we know how Stoops rolls. This was the perfect, what he's like, oh, you mean I don't even have to trot out my new offense and show it to the public? Okay, fine by me. Twist my arm.
I don't think he's regretting that decision or was super upset about it for sure.
Right. So essentially this spring practice is going to be limited to us overanalyzing every clip they share and the quotes we get in media conversations. We're going to hear from them Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays. That's kind of the schedule for the next 5 weeks. And frankly, there's definitely going to have some lulls here and there, but I'm excited. We have, we spoke with Stoops on Monday along with our running backs coach in John Settle. And then we heard from Lane Cohen and Josh Howie Tuesday morning. And the big kind of overarching takeaway, if you will, it really does come down to what you said. He's like, you know, we're not focusing on competition at all. And that's not to say they aren't grading these guys out, but they're not trying to fill spots right now. It's everybody, we're going to run this damn offense and it's going to be a tight ship. We're going to get everybody on the same page. And that's going to be what's happening over the next 15 practices, is getting everybody on the same page, working as efficiently as possible within this new offense that Cohen's got.
I think that's very true. They're just learning a lot of new stuff. Mm-hmm. Like Cohen said today, they've only done really tight zone. Where in his offense, they're probably going to do three different types of zone. It's the tight, the mid, and then the outside zone. So it's learning the different steps. We heard John Settle talk about the angles the running back has to take. And he said, they're probably going to get sick and tired of me saying slow two, fast through.
Oh, great saying.
So there's going to be a bunch of different new things, especially for that offense, going through and trying to figure out. So that's why Stoops' introductory press conference, I think, when he maybe prepared for that on his little notepad he brings in, I think he wrote probably fundamentals on there, because I think that's a key point to this spring, is just getting that down pat and figuring out who they are and just working on getting better themselves, not worrying about anything else. Because one thing that's nice about the spring, it's the only practice you ever have in football where you really, it doesn't end with a game plan. You're just you're really just practicing to get better, because even bowl prep, there's always that game at the end, and then in the season, you're preparing, you know, all training camp, but eventually it turns into that, you know, week one opponent.
Right.
Where this, there's no opponent. It's just working on getting better, and the install that's going on with Cohen right now. I think he did have an interesting quote that I liked today. It was about, like, he has his base stuff, so that's what the stuff they're gonna install. This spring, but then after that, it's watching the tape, figuring out strength and weaknesses, and then building the offense really around that. Like, you're gonna have your base stuff that you do, but then figuring out the best ways to highlight the strengths of your football team. That's a very NFL approach, and that's an approach I think they need more thinking like that. And I, that was probably the best thing I heard over the last 2 days was that comment about him saying that we're gonna, you know, we have a have our base stuff, but we're gonna build it around what the team does best. And to me, that says featuring the guys. So Chris Rodriguez is gonna get the rock, and finding ways to get the tight ends involved, finding ways to get Wandale Robinson the football in space.
The way it's kind of described too, like it when you talk about fundamentals and stuff. Like, I can just see, I mean, Luke Fortner isn't the type of guy to do that. But if I was in his shoes and I'm 6 year super senior Luke Fortner, I'm rolling my eyes. Like, God, fundamentals. We're going to be doing this whole crap over and over. But that's not the case now, because fundamentals are fundamentals. But there is something, there's change. There's something new. So that, like, Josh Ali, he's like, you know, I can't wait till we get to go back out to practice again, because it is the I'm going back to school for the first time in 3 months. As much as we used to gripe about going back to school, look, it was kind of fun seeing your friends, and, you know, you get to meet your new teacher. They're meeting their new teacher now, and they're
three new teachers, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a ton of them. So it's you can tell there's going to be a lot of energy at these practices. And I think it's going to be one of those things that, you know, we'll get one or two nuggets a day, probably, of something like, oh, this is intriguing. Something that I'm sure we've talked about, you know,
it's going to be like times. It's going to be like a piece of gum, piece of bubble gum. Like, it's new and interesting. The flavor is really flavorful, but we're going to chew the crap out of it until there's nothing left there. That's part of the fun with spring, because you only get so much, and then you try to stretch that out as far as possible.
Well, and it's very basic, but when all these, like, yeah, you know, I could tell today that I got open because they were paying attention to Wandale.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's something that we've probably mentioned, but when you could see it happen, I think it's certainly, you know, it's putting some proof in the pudding. And something that Ali did sneak in there too, that I think we've at least mentioned, but Josh Ali did confirm that Liam Cohen is what convinced him to come back for another year.
Right. Yeah. We thought that was the case, but it was made public today.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is an NFL offense. Great quote.
Right.
Just nice and snappy. And especially whenever they're like, okay, here's what we did. Well, here's how it's supposed to be done. And then you pop on some NFL tape. That's got to get the guys fired up, you know? It just does.
Speaking of the NFL tape, he mentioned multiple times about watching the Rams tape, specifically with Levis, and I think a good chunk of that offense is going to come from that, what they did there. He mentioned Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, things that made them a special receiver for the Rams, such as, you know, blocking on that flow where you run zone left side and they flow back right, either to do a kickout block or to act as an action, and then they just sneak out into the passing lane. I think when you look at Wandale and Josh Ali, like we've talked about from the beginning, similar skill sets to those two guys. So I think that's really how they're going to use them. I expect a lot of condensed formations, a lot of pre-stat motion. I think we're going to see a ton of 12 personnel. You said all three tight ends are good football players, which is something us following the program have known. It's probably one of the strengths of the offense to go along with the offensive line. We said that's going to be the identity of the team, which is, you know, that's how Mark Stoops wants it. I think he's built it like that. So I think that's those are all good
Higman
things.
Lead the way.
Right. Those are all good things to hear. I think
got a Tyler Higbee shout out too.
Yeah, we did.
Go Tops. Go. Tops on top.
And but there are still questions, you know, who else is at receiver? Quarterback is the elephant in the room, obviously. Mm-hmm. At running back after Rodriguez, I think that's a question that people aren't really asking right now. That's something they're going to have to figure out. You know, can Kavassie Smoke stay healthy? Is Jatom McClain ready to contribute? Is Travis Tisdale ready to break through? Can Lavelle Wright get some traction in these early practices? They got to find one or two more guys there they can depend on outside of number 24.
Well, kid, I do have – I've got a big concern about Lavelle Wright. Big concern. He's wearing number 27. Do you – or no, excuse me, Chauncey 29. Magwood. Yeah. And Magwood's wearing 27. What kind of numbers are those? That's not a running back's number. That's not a receiver's number. You ever heard of a receiver number 27 or a running back 29?
Aaron Boyd flashbacks I had when I went through the roster.
I mean, am I being weird for point? But that isn't. It just doesn't pop. It doesn't snap for me. I don't know. I just it worries me. It's a very dumb concern. But I can't ever remember our running back even wearing number
27. I don't think that number will stick for very long. Like Andrew Phillips is number 37. I don't think when he plays this year he'll be rocking 37. That's not really a cornerback number.
Be stepping in.
See, you come in at the bottom of the pile, low man on the totem pole. You just kind of get stuck with some bad numbers sometimes. Yeah. And then you can do the DeAndre Square route where you switch it up every season. Start at 43, go to 17, go to 5. I was disappointed we're not going to get his senior number. I was hoping he would stay for 5 years. Let's get five different numbers. Let's just do the whole thing.
It'd be great, too, if this was like, you know, somebody got a different DeAndre Square jersey for each year.
And speaking of numbers, we've got Wilson Berry sticking with the 93 tradition. So Kentucky punter is going to rock 93. We've got, you know, that 18 was a thing there for a little bit. Now we got 93. I'd say go for it. You know, LSU, right. LSU has a thing where they give their, like, the captain of the team or something. He wears number 7 every year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do that here at Kentucky. Let's just wear the punter. You're wearing 93.
I like, too, that Max even tweeted at you and was like, oh, so is he got to announce his number at a press conference? Which,
my bad. I forgot. Punters are people, too. My bad, Max.
In fairness, I mean, like, it's – we can't make this a huge talking point. But you want to talk about a hell of a group to work out with. Wilson Berry, Jordan Berry, Max Duffy. Like, you're going to find too many groups of special teamers working out together that are much better than that. And I don't know if McGinnis is back in town, but if he is, he sure as hell should be kicking with him too. So,
right.
That's a quality group of kickers working out at once.
Speaking of kickers, let's get into the special teams comment. It's a committee again. Sorry to disappoint all you special teams coordinator truthers.
No, well, technically, there's co-special teams coordinator.
Yeah, and so then Matt Sakis. I like the comment where Matt Sakis coaches all of them, so like he's in charge. like we said from the beginning.
Yeah, he really is in charge. And Stoops just wanted to give some guys. He's like, well, we can throw Frank under the bus. He can take the heat.
shout out to Coach Settle here, but he's not drawing up schemes on punt and punt return. Like Matt Sakis is doing all that stuff.
Man.
And then he's coaching behind the scenes.
I like those air quotes for behind the scenes. Settle had a great, great quote for people who watch a lot of football probably know that the easiest way to lose a football game is on special
teams. He's
right
on that.
And that is such a great, coachy quote. And let's talk about Settle for a little bit because that news came out over the weekend and he had his introductory press conference on day one, shows up on Monday, ready to work, speaks with the media. You know, they had a walkthrough with the guys in a meeting, but really hadn't seen too much of them. But I think a James Conner comp for Chris Rodriguez is not a bad start.
You want to hear James Conner's numbers, one year with Settle?
They were stupid.
Let's go. 298 carries. Over 13 games, so 22.9 carries per game. That's riding your horse.
Uh-huh.
1,765 yards, put up 5.29 yards per pop, pretty solid. 26 touchdowns. So that, like, we complained about not riding the guy. That's riding the guy for sure. Uh-huh. He was sixth nationally in rushing yards that year. Melvin Gordon wasn't saying that he ran for 2,500 yards that year. But yeah, that's
it was like good. The 1 year that good he wasn't at Wisconsin. So he spent a decade at Wisconsin and kind last of had some 4 years with in between there.
Jonathan Taylor, who was a freak for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he rode him. And really, he was with Paul Chryst since his last year at Pittsburgh. So he followed Chryst to Pittsburgh or to Wisconsin, 2014 to 2021, worked under Chryst. Now, who also worked under Chryst was a guy by the name of Matt House at Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to think that might have been the relationship there.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point to kind of see where the connections lead. But Acetyl is he was an all-pro running back for the Falcons in the late 80s, I think 87, but didn't have too long of a career. I'm assuming injuries just caught up with him. But he's a 27-year coaching vet, a lot of time in the NFL as well. So he's pretty used to adapting to schemes and coaching and different things. But I think it's also important that he's the old head in the room now. At 55, he's the oldest coach on the staff. So, it worked out well having Eddie Grant as kind of the old hard-nosed disciplinarian with the running backs last time. And I definitely think you're going to get that same kind of presence in the running back room with Settle.
When you look at the construction of Kentucky's offensive staff right now, you've got they're both like 35 years old in that range. You've got Wolford, who by all accounts is a straight up character
mm-hmm.
coaching the offensive line, which most of the times OL coaches are.
Yes.
And so you kind of need that dynamic. You can't have not necessarily good cop, bad cop, but you can't have four guys that are all kind of the same. I think you need to have
some balance. Yeah.
And Settle comes off very much as no nonsense approach.
Mm-hmm.
Very professional. This is how we do things a certain way. And like, I get the, like, just first impression only, you get the sense that there's not going to be many jokes or pranks going on in that running back room over camp when they're all together for 30 days. It's going to be a lot of, it's going to be a business-like approach. Very focused, very driven, no nonsense. Which is something I think the staff on offense, I think they needed a little bit of that to blend kind of the young guys they got, mm-hmm. which I think Boo Knight, he also comes off like that too. I will say, even though he's younger, he definitely comes off as, you know, he's all business and it's getting down to what needs to be done. And speaking of receivers, I love the Ali quote, or I didn't love it. I kind of agreed with it. It's hard to get reps right now when you got 17 scholarship receivers
mm-hmm.
in the spring. You have to think attrition is going to come there at some point. That's just way too many guys there for a non-air raid offense. It's just way too many.
Yeah, they're going to run a bunch of 12 personnel stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So they'll eventually there will be attrition. There's no doubt about that. I'm trying not to get distracted because we just received our first few little snippets inside practice. Glad they were outside. Nice cool day. Not too
the football
cool,
weather. There you go.
Yeah, it was some good football weather. And oh my goodness, there's three Muschamps working for Kirby Smart. Two working for Kirby Smart and one quarterback.
It's some plays.
Just all Muschamp everything. I'm sure that's going to work well at Georgia. What could go wrong? Let's just fill up a staff full of Muschamps. But to get back to spring ball, you have a complete coaching staff. You have and I like the way that Settle kind of broke down in detail to the because here's the thing with all the boring fundamental stuff. A lot of the new scheme, it's not just here's your playbook. It's not just handing them a sheet from Madden and saying, this is what we're going to do. A lot of this stuff is predicated on being on the same page. So, like, you know, I remember trying to get our offensive linemen to learn outside zone in high school, and we were a wing T team.
Did the same thing, and it was a hard learning experience. For my senior year, they tried to Institute. Really, I think it was just inside zone, and it's—I mean, it was hard. And we ended up throwing it out the window about four or five games in the season. But it was so different to what we did, right?
Because when you run these stretch plays, everybody has to be on the same page from a footwork standpoint, and that's where the fundamentals come in. Yeah, because everybody—it's almost like you've got to be on a string where when one person pulls, the other person follows with them. And from a running back's perspective, that means when we call this stretch, we're going in this same direction with the same steps every single time so the quarterback can give it to us. And that way, we're on par. We're in sync with the offensive line. And we have our eyes in the right place. And as soon as we see what we like, we get north and south. Fast, slow two, fast through. Slow two, fast through. And The other great line he had was indecision first shows up in your feet. We can't have anybody dancing in the backfield. It's all got to be precise. And I think that's where there's going to be frustrations at times with this coaching staff, because it's breaking guys into new things. And that's what this spring
is going to be growing pains for sure.
So we won't see it. But there's certainly going to be times where we hear from the coaches at the podium afterwards, and there's a little bit of teeth gritting afterwards. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The one thing with outside zone, I say, like, the attack point is kind of off tackle. But a lot of times that thing can get cut up. Mm-hmm. So just because you're going out, that's the beauty of the play. Just because you're going out there doesn't mean the run's going to be the sideline. There's a lot of plays where you'll see outside zone, if you pull up some clips, the thing gets cut up because you create kind of a wash effect, where everybody's moving in one direction, like you're talking about, the defense over pursuits, and that could create, you know, big cutback lanes. And that's a lot of times where you can get some defenses for some big plays. So that's something to remember with this. And like Darian Kennard, he's going to be a great backside tackle on some of these outside zone plays, because he can just wash people. I mean, he just annihilates people coming downfield. So watching him, maybe getting ear holing some linebackers and stuff on tape, that's going to be some fun stuff to watch. But there is going to be a learning curve. It's learning how to do that. And Cohen said, you know, even these offensive linemen are kind of bigger than some of the guys he had in the NFL. But I think a good thing for this is they've got a very experienced offensive line. So hopefully that means a quicker learning curve.
Right.
And then we learned Jagger Burton's getting started out at guard.
Yeah. Which he was always projected as, but you just didn't know.
Yeah. With his new scheme, you could see he could maybe slide out the tackle.
Yeah. So
potentially.
But they're starting him there. I'm not sure how much personnel, like who's playing where with what. I don't know how many revelations we're going to get in regards to that. But Jagger also, I think to go back to that original point you made about the base and everything, he kind of detailed how, you know, they ran UK's offense at Frederick Douglass, the kind of inside zone, smash you in the face stuff. And it's like, you know, now a lot of the stuff you see where we're running a play now to see how the defense reacts so we can set up something else for later on in the game. And everything just feels a little bit more cerebral, like
you're playing chess, not checkers anymore.
Which, like, okay, this is the pushing the program forward that Mark Stoops talked about throughout the offseason. And it's exciting. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, I'm just ready to see what it looks like. I think I'm going to try to slide in next week. I want to ask Cohen, like, if you're not getting under center all the time, can you still do the play action stuff you want to do out of pistol?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that something you can accomplish, or is that something you really need to work on your under center stuff to be more effective? Pre-snap motion. How much pre-snap motion are we going to see? Stuff like
good.
That. How many wide receivers do you want to have? What do you feel comfortable? What's the number of wide receivers you want to have in your rotation? Stuff like that. And just see what are his thoughts on you just having a heavy, you know, riding one more running back. Heavy, or do you want more of a committee approach like we saw last year? There's still a lot for us to learn, and it does stink. I really do not like that we're not going to get a spring game. It is a major bummer.
It is the most Stoops thing ever, though.
Yeah,
just not going to show anything. I'm never going to get over the we can't get under center thing. That's just garbage, malarkey to me. Like, you teach 10-year-olds how to get under center, and you just do it every single day. Like, if you – you see them in practice. They take snaps from the center every single day. What's the difference between going out of shotgun and going under center? Oh, you've got to actually grab the ball and then take 3 to 5 steps backwards. It's not that freaking hard. Yeah, it's routinized. So
they have limited amount of limited amount of practice time, and I think a lot of that is they just don't. The coaches just not want to waste practice time on this rudimentary skill that you should have, but a lot of kids don't have because everything's out of the gun now. In the younger levels of football,
noise the hell out of me.
And then you get when happens that like. As a quarterback, you have to learn because the first time they take snaps under center, like Joey Gatewood, who's never had it, I guarantee he got his foot smashed 7 to 8 times because you have to get out quick or that center's on that first step. He's jamming on your pinky toe. So that's part. It's just a lot of.
Getting stepped on sucks.
Mm-hmm. Especially those cleats, man. That does not feel good.
That's probably the only thing. Is the only worst pain on a football field just a helmet to the fun, like a face mask to the funny bone
or the shin?
Yeah, man, getting cleated on the shin, that might be the worst. Because the funny bone does go away, you know, mm-hmm. after a couple minutes, you kind of get that tingling out of your hands. But man, the cuts on the front of your shin. Oh. Yeah. Did you all ever have anybody try to box jump and miss and scrape themselves up?
Probably.
We had some dude just bleeding all over the place because he couldn't get his badass.
I was watching some Bobby Carpenter who played at Ohio State. I think it was him. It was some linebacker that used to play Ohio State. He said something on a podcast or Twitter or something I saw where he said a lot of people do that. Like inside linebackers, you're getting people stepping on your feet all the time. Mm-hmm. So before the season, he would cut his toenails bare off.
Ah.
Pull them off. Because they would get smashed and he'd had to rip them off during the season. So he said it was easier just to not even mess with them.
Those are some bad dudes, man. I wouldn't mess with those guys. Would not mess with those guys. We got to talk a little bit of recruiting too. But first, support for 11 personnel is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below the waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million people worldwide, and we have an exclusive offer for our listeners, 20% off plus free shipping with the code ROUSH. That's ROUSH at manscaped.com. Manscaped, they hooked me up with one of their Perfect Package 3.0 kits. And here's the thing about Manscaped trimmers. They use a cutting edge ceramic blade to make sure you aren't cutting yourselves, nicking yourself up. And here's the thing, look at people. I get bald jokes quite often. It's a part of everyday life for me. And I actually use it, cut my hair with it last week, freaking just mowed that stuff down. And, there was a guy by the name of, I think it's Ron Swanson, who said, shave a man's back and he'll purr like a walrus. Well, I was purring like a walrus because that thing just gets it right off in no time. The wife was pleased because the other trimmer I had, it was junky. And this one, it also has a light to so that you can kind of see where you're going. It's a great tool. And if you use... If you get the 3.0 Perfect Package, they'll also throw in a couple of gifts, some boxer briefs in that package that are nice and comfortable, very comfortable. They're all about making sure you're comfortable. And if you use the code ROUSH at manscaped.com, they'll get 20% off plus free shipping. And get this, like, they've got a great saying, your balls will thank you.
Be mad, yes. Swiss Army knife of the razor blade game for sure.
But yeah, get 20% off free shipping with the code ROUSH at manscaped.com. 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code ROUSH, ROUSH. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Lucky, we had two big recruiting stories from over the weekend. Do we want our good news or our bad news first?
Let's get the bad news out of the way.
Okay, bad news. Steve Wiltfong logged a Rutgers crystal ball for Gavin Wimsett. Now, it wasn't like a 9 or 10 on his confidence level, which I think is funny that they have those now. So it kind of gives him the right to wiggle out of it if he wants to. But essentially, Whimsitt went on a visit with his family to Piscataway and came away very impressed. And they liked what they saw, so much so that Wilt Fong went ahead and logged a pick for Rutgers. Noted that Georgia Tech, Cincinnati, and Kentucky are kind of the top four, with Georgia Tech kind of behind. So, Luckett, there's the information. What do you make of the facts that we have to work with right now?
Yeah, number one, I think Greg Schiano and their new offensive coordinator, Sean Gleason, who came from the Ivy League and then worked 1 year for Gundy. He's kind of this wunderkind, the next kind of savant, I guess you would say, that people have talked about. I think they're selling that hard, and I think early playing time is probably getting sold really hard. So whatever they're selling works, is working up there.
At the number nine recruiting class right now in the country. Now,
right.
It's now, early, and they just got commitments, but right. Still.
But he has some momentum up there right now after getting a few wins last season. So I think that's the sell, early playing time, where at Kentucky he's probably going to have to maybe wait a little bit. But it's not good. It just doesn't look good. Now, Wimsatt's going to enter a position where if he comes to Kentucky where he's going to have to earn a spot and all that jazz. But this is a kid they've recruited for a long time. They sacrificed, I think, themselves to go after this kid as far as their quarterback goes in this class. And so if they don't get him, they're in really tough shape. There's not really much out there left where they could have maybe really gone really hard after Drew Allar.
Right.
Or that Steven Jelly kid up in New Jersey or whatnot. But now they've kind of
handcuffed themselves to Whimsitt. Right. And then now you're stuck with and the thing that I think is even worse is that it's Cincinnati or Rutgers. And like, you know, if that remains the case, he's going to drop way down the rankings. Like that's just how these things work. But it's just not a good look. I don't know any other way to say that this does not it looks really poorly. Now, this can change, obviously. It reminds me of old recruiting Luckett when people actually went on visits and they came back and had a rave review, and now you're worried they might go somewhere else. We had heard nothing from Whimsitt's camp at all in a long time. So the fact that this is the first thing in a while, that's another reason to be concerned. And why you're kind of just getting to the point where you're like, well, I hope this Will Levis guy's pretty darn good. Hope Kai Sharon is better than advertised, because not a whole lot of other options out there.
Yeah. I mean, the final list is not, I mean, just that's not great. Like, that's not what you want, I guess, your quarterback to who you want to be beating out, I guess I would say. So yeah, from that, it's not necessarily great, but I think optics more than anything on this, it just hurts. This class has got a chance to be really good. Like, I think this class has a chance to be their highest ranked class ever, even higher than 2020. But Wimsatt's a big deal with that, because a lot of this is about building recruiting momentum, and to build momentum, you've got to get the quarterback on board. And now you look at it, Wimsatt's like the only top 100 quarterback, I think, left that is uncommitted, where everybody else has their quarterback and they're starting to build momentum for the rest of their class, where Kentucky really needs that so they can get rolling.
Yeah. Well, and even if the quarterback doesn't end up doing anything for you, a la Drew Barker, you got Mike Edwards out of that class. You got Darius West out of that class. You got Boom Williams. You were able to get a lot of other talented guys just because of the quarterback. So even when he ended up when he didn't produce for you, now there's obviously some other circumstances of that, but it doesn't matter because you have the other guys already in play, and that person played a big role in getting that started. So like you said, it's a real kick in the shins, maybe a cleat to the toe, but there, I will say that it doesn't sound like he's still nearing a decision really. So, I mean, it's, around March, you would think that he'd probably have this thing wrapped up.
Yeah, it's very odd that this lasted this long. Usually these quarterback commitments happen pretty fast.
I guess Bo happened in April when they did that visit with, you know, all the other big guys. But
Yeah. So maybe, maybe Kentucky can get them on campus and then that swings the other way. Right, I think that's the hope. Hopefully that happens soon. Because like I said, you need to get this in your back pocket if you can get him, so you can start filling out the rest of your class. Because they're in on a lot of really high quality prospects right now.
And they just got a pretty good one too, from Georgia.
Yeah, out of nowhere a little bit.
And this one was a rare non-John Summerall deep South guy. Anwar Stewart helped recruit Andre Stewart, which can be complicated, a three-star cornerback from Georgia who was once committed to Auburn. To make matters more confusing, Luckett, there's an Andre Stewart that's from he's a 2022 quarterback from Marietta, Georgia. UK's Andre Stewart is from Snellville, Georgia. Both are Grayson Atlanta suburbs. Mm-hmm. You know, Marietta, you and Alpharetta are probably more familiar with, but
one of the 8,000 Atlanta suburbs.
Exactly. So I was watching, I watched like five plays of film. And I was like, is this guy really like, what is it? And then realized, oh, wrong one. I thought too, like, did he transfer? Did he play somewhere else? I was like, no. Okay, good. There's another Andre Stewart out there. And this guy, oh, he actually hits people. He's a pretty big dude. He can play.
Yeah. Top 500 prospect in the composite. Auburn decommit, like you said. He had some pretty big offers. A lot of SEC schools are in on him, plus Oregon. And you watch the tape's really good. You know, in two plays. First play, he's lighting somebody up on the perimeter, filling the run. He's got really good drops. He flips his hips really well. Like, there's one play where he's deep in a back pedal. He flips his hip towards the sideline and then just a toe drag for an interception.
Toe drag swag.
Yeah, coming out of nowhere to make plays in center field. Chase down tackles after the free safety bit on a run formation. He comes and runs down the tight end who had no one around him. So, I mean, it's just a really good tape. It's exactly the type of corner prospect you want. It's going to be a dogfight probably to keep onto him from down there, especially if he has a really good senior season.
This was one of those rare instances too. Like, Mark Stoops broke it.
Yeah, I know. That's how you know. Like, that's how you know it's a big commitment. You had Stoops and Brad White sending out tweets about it. That was a big deal. And for Anwar Stewart, man, we saw him get into Metro Atlanta last year. Get Devontae Ross. He gets this kid, which is a big recruiting win. I think if you can add that, where you're a factor in Atlanta a little bit, where you can get a couple kids to class, you add that in what Summerall's doing in South Georgia and Alabama. And then with Merrow and Kentucky and Ohio, and then with Clinkscale in the Detroit area, that's four really good areas that you have pulls to pull players from. I think that's really, really good to have that. Not everybody has something like that from a college football standpoint. So that really gives you a lot of options for signing classes and a lot of quality options, I think, if he can do that. Now, we've seen this was his first big one, but let's see if we can do it again. But I think if you get into that Atlanta area, like I've said in the past, the baseline of your class is going to be Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, those kids. But to get to where you want to get to, like, you don't have to be at a lot of them for them, but you got to have a handful of kids from the deep South that quality that other SEC schools want. And that's how you kind of level up to the next spot you want to be at, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. This is another example. We'll see if they can hold on to him. But just like they went and got Christian Lewis, got Trevin Wallace, Chauncey Magwood, this is another example. You've got to go in and land kids like this. And I think that shows growth, and hopefully it's a trend that we see continue moving forward.
No, definitely, because there's a lot of talent in there, and it also just goes to show you how far the Kentucky brand has gone. And, I mean, Settle even mentioned that at one point where he's like, Wisconsin brand, well, Kentucky's got a brand for running the football and running
Kentucky,
it well, you know?
Right. As right now, they're a team that goes to bowl games every year. So people, that's what you see.
Yeah.
They're not competing for championships, but you're a recruit, hey, I can go there. They're about six guys drafted, which they're talking about. They still have the 18 class. So they have all these draft picks. They win. So you're like, hey, I can go to the SEC, play for a team that wins, get drafted. Like that's the sell. It's a totally different light than what they were even 3 years ago.
And the thing is, too, that we have to play this game quite frequently. That reminds us how old we are. Stoops' bowl streak, it began when these kids that are now going to be seniors were eighth graders, right? Is it eighth or seventh graders? Either way, when they turned on games on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve.
Barely a teenager.
Yeah. And so that's what they know. It's much different than what us old folks know, you know.
And Kentucky's had, let's face it, they've had some brand names here recently.
Yeah.
National media folks talk up Josh Allen. They talked up Benny Snell.
Lynn Bowden.
They talked up Lynn Bowden. And now in the draft, you're getting Jamin Davis talked up a ton.
Yeah, man.
So that you're seeing that Kentucky logo a lot more in prominent places.
Mm-hmm.
In the college football/NFL sphere.
Beat by, you know, some Florida receiver on a route, you know,
right.
on draft day. Which, man, Daniel Jeremiah, big fan of Jamin Davis.
Yeah, he loves him, man.
I mean, a big fan of Jamin Davis. So, pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's sounding like Davis is probably going to go to the Browns. There at the end of the first round. That seems to be
the popular
where it's gonna happen.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Man, I'm feeling a little deflated as an NFL fan because last summer when nothing was happening, I got bored and picked an NFL team. And I should have just picked the Titans. I was like, oh well, the Steelers, they're not a bad candidate. They play fun football. Well, they did. And they won their first 11 games, but then Bud got hurt. Now he's making $16+ million for the Titans.
They're in cap purgatory right now.
I know, they can't do anything. And NFL free agency is pretty fun, although it was really obnoxious.
It's gotten a lot better.
The so-and-so has renegotiated. I mean, everybody and their brothers renegotiated their contract under this new cap, which has just been kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. But
and the franchise tag can throw a wrench at some things.
Yeah.
I still don't hold on your – know how that works. I'm kind of getting better at it, but it's still
as confusing as the like the European soccer, how all that stuff works. That stuff's crazy. You got a transfer window, you buy your rights to players. That's all nutty. I can kind of get a grasp on this, and what I'm really looking forward to is right before we started recording, Bears Twitter just started losing their minds.
I know.
And I think I don't know if it started because of a Lewis Riddick tweet, but he said something along the lines of, we warned you, and we warned you that this was going to happen a week ago. And after the Saints signed Jameis to a one-year deal and Taysom Hill to a one-year deal, the process of elimination, Russell Wilson to the Bears is, I mean, there's not many other teams that he could go to.
Yeah, but I've also seen link to the Bears too.
Who to the Bears?
Andy Dalton. Mike Garofalo, the NFL Network, said that this morning.
Man, so that would be.
I think he said that they're locked in on Andy Dalton.
That would be much more on brand to have Nick Foles and Andy Dalton sharing a quarterback room in Chicago. You know, I don't even know how. I don't even know how I could look at the Bears if they had a competent quarterback. Like, because even Jay Cutler, when he was good, he was still Cutler, you know? Like,
yeah, it's hard to sometimes because you see some of these franchises go without whatever. But the good thing about the NFL, man, you can fix that stuff quick. It starts with quarterback. If you get the quarterback, like the Patriots weren't anything Brady, mm-hmm. and now they've got 7 Super Bowl. They lead the franchise or they lead the league in Super Bowls. It's all about. Now the quarterback. Now there's good franchises and bad franchises.
Right, right.
But if you can find a quarterback, it changes everything.
And that's to get bring it back to Kentucky football. Getting the quarterback right, mm-hmm. we're not going to find it out. But the importance of it is you don't want to become the Chicago Bears of the SEC because mm-hmm. that's kind of what it feels like you're kind of doing right now. You're the Chicago Bears of the SEC. You run the ball. You play really sound defense, but you haven't had a quarterback to take you to the next level. And that's why Mark Stoops probably yep. going here.
Right. That's Cohen's top priority. And we haven't seen Mark Stoops Kentucky with a good quarter, a very, very, or a very, let's say, very good quarterback or an upper
a
level
game-changing
SEC
quarterback.
Yes. Yeah. A jet pilot, not a bus driver. we haven't seen an elite level kind of a guy that NFL team very interested in seeing. We haven't seen that under Stoops. What does it look like if they get it? That's my, I just want to see what that looks like.
Just so they've
had to win certain in different ways.
Have you noticed that everybody, they don't call him Coach Cohen, they just call him Liam?
I did notice that today.
It just, I don't know. Like, I just, if I'm not,
you might, maybe you have to earn that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Cause it's almost like when you hear that a school is calling teachers by their first name and it just puts a bad taste in your mouth, you're like, what the hell is this, Mr. or Mrs.? But at the same time, like what were they just calling Vince Big Dog, or they calling Vince, you know? So like, I'm sure there's a certain level of, you know, between one or the other, like Davis, Jamin Davis calls John Summerall Donk. Hey, Donk. So like, you know,
My wife, when we first started dating, she would call her mom by her first name and I would get on her case. I was like, Taylor, do not know. So I'd started making her call her mom. It's your mom. Call her your mom. Do not do that.
Oh, man. Well, look at spring ball. We made it. One more thing that we've got to bring up that it feels like an eternity ago, because you had conference championship weekend, you had selection Sunday. There's just been so much going on, but this was just Thursday afternoon, and we were talking to David Wallabaugh about bashing dudes on an ice hockey rink.
I'm all in. Like, that was one of my favorite. He had one of my favorite tapes, I think, coming out of high school, but now I'm all in. Now you can see the balance, the range, and that he was just going Fulton Reed on these fools. I just love it. Just love it. I'm all in.
Oh, man. It was so great because, you know, it was one of those things, like a little footnote in his bio, but we're like, oh, well, let's ask about it. You know, we can only ask so many Coach Wolford questions or whatever.
Where's he from? Akron? Is it Akron area or Cleveland area where he's
one
from?
One of the two. I get them all mixed up. But, yeah, general north, yeah. Northeast Ohio.
I guess I'm assuming hockey's probably –
Yeah, and his dad's originally from Buffalo, I believe.
Right.
So, you know, they're much more hockey folks. And so he grew up playing it. He said he started skating when he was 3. And it's kind of been with him ever since. He quit playing as a sophomore in high school and then grew a couple more inches and put on some more pounds. But even so, he sent me a couple old highlight videos. Yeah. And he just looks like he's towering over opponents. Like, I cannot imagine – I'm just trying to skate down the ice and all of a sudden looking at the corner of my eye and just ba-doom. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Makes me want to watch the Mighty Ducks, though.
Did you see they relaunched the Mighty Ducks on Disney Plus, like made a TV show? I think Bombay's going to be in it.
Really?
Yeah.
I
think the premise of it is that, like, the Ducks are now the Hawks now.
Like, oh, no, they've become the bad guys?
Yeah, like they built like this, you know, they became like this powerhouse and they got a new coach and they build like a new duck kind of thing.
Man, it's just going to be so hard for me to ever. I mean, I'm sure some of these reboots, they got the Disney stuff too. They'll be fine. But not having Goldberg or Keenan, like there's certain characters that just, I mean, Goldberg, how many movies was he in? Between that guy, there's always a fat kid in one of these kids' movies. It was the kid from The Sandlot, the catcher. He was in a bunch of them, and so was Goldberg. And they were just great. They were great, chubby guys you love to laugh at. But I need my funny fat kid if it's going to be worth my while.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. Like Charlie Conway in Dawson's Creek. Like, what are we doing here? Can't be doing this.
He was in a serious role. He was playing Reese Witherspoon's husband in a show that my wife watched. It was, you know, it was one of those, like,
he was in Cruel Intentions. I don't know if you ever seen that movie.
He was in Cruel Intentions too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one was, I don't know. It was based out of the 90s though. It was some Hulu show. And it's like,
yeah,
man, you've got to have Charlie Conway, whatever it is. He's got to be set in the 90s. I don't care if he is 30 years older. He's a 90s guy. He's forever stuck in that decade. But we're not forever stuck on this podcast. We need to get out of here. But like, it's good to finally talk some ball, despite not actually seeing it with our own two eyes. Kentucky football's back, baby. Woohoo!
Man, it feels good to have it back. Excited to see what we get from here moving forward. And recruiting should ramp up. I think we're all on Wimsat watch, even the coaches over there. at the Joe Kraft facility. So watch what happened with Wimsatt, and then just seeing what kind of nuggets we can get out of this spring ball where we're not going to have any access. At least they just like let us watch a practice or just put it on tape.
Hell, you know what I bet they'll do? They'll do the if they give us a 7-on-7 period. That's probably the closest we'll get. As yeah. 7-on-7. And even Cohen said, he's like, I don't even know if we're going to tackle. It's like, well, that's a good point. Yeah. You know, that's stuff you don't think about. Yeah. So
I'm sure they'll have a scrimmage or two where they go live.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably two of them later on. But long way to go. Kentucky, they're installing the offense, working on the fundamentals. We're working on our fundamentals, getting in tip-top shape for you this spring. Make sure you stay in tip-top shape. Hit up Manscaped. Use the promo code Roush. Receive 20% off. And free shipping helps out the podcast, helps out you keep you in good shape this March as the madness ramps up. Well, have you filled out a bracket yet?
I have not the whole way. I kind of went through and picked my final four first run, but I have not filled one out yet.
I still haven't done it yet either. I'll get to it eventually. But I have a friend who put $10 bets on all the money line underdogs, 15 seed down in the first round. So
one hits. Yeah. That's all you're asking for.
Yeah. So I'm excited to, like, I'm living vicariously through him. So
Iowa seems right for the picky. Maybe that's the one.
Man, I hope there's some big ones. It's going to be weird, but we're going to have some fun. And we're going to have some fun talking football with y'all on 11 Personnel. We'll be back next week. And until then, just remember to go Cats and go Kroger.